Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is George Werthner. He's the Ecological Projects Director for the Foundation for Deep Ecology. He's an ecologist and wildlands activist. He's published 38 books on environmental issues and natural history, including such environmentally focused books as Welfare Ranching, Wildfire, Through a Craft, Energy, and most recently, Protecting the Wild. Today, we talk about beetles and beetles as a keystone species. So, before we talk about what beetles really do, can you present the common narrative these days concerning beetles in Western forests? Like, I'll back up just a second. I got a note from somebody a couple days ago saying, I was just driving through the Sierra Nevadas, and there's so many dead trees, and then I read this thing by Jerry Brown saying that we need to cut down all these trees because the beetles are killing them.
Right. Well, that is the common scenario, is that the view of most people, including most foresters and agency folks, is that beetles are something to be eliminated from the forest, as wolves are to be eliminated from elk herds and deer herds. The common denominator is that the beetles are seen as destructive agents to what is, and I put it with quotes, a healthy forest. But that illustrates a failure to understand the positive effect of beetles on forest ecosystems in the same way that we fail to understand, or many fail to understand, the positive influence of large predators like wolves on, say, elk and deer herds. The beetles are thin the forest, and by the way, at no cost to us, since most timber sales on federal lands lose money, and a lot of the rationale for logging these days is to reduce the density of forests for a variety of reasons. But the beetles are doing that for free, and they do a better job of it, just like wolves do a better job of thinning an elk herd than hunters, because just as hunters do not select the weakest and the least productive animals in an elk herd, why wolves do, loggers and foresters with paint cans don't necessarily select the trees that are the most vulnerable to environmental conditions. And so we tend to want to log forests that have either been affected by beetles, or we sometimes hear that we need to log the forest in advance of beetles, because if we don't, the beetles will kill some of the trees. And it's an interesting kind of thing. I particularly when that's advocated, it reminds me of what I might call the Vietnamese approach to forestry. Just like in Vietnam, we had to, quote, destroy the country in order to win the war. The idea that we should cut down all the trees because they might die from beetles has the same logic. I once was on a field trip with a state forester, and I said, well, why can't we just let the beetles kill the trees? And he's like, he just got his neck, his veins came out of his neck, and he got all red in the face. And he said, you mean you're just going to let the trees die? And I said, well, some of them will die, but, you know, when you cut them down, they die too. And somehow that's not, you know, easily understood in their mode of thinking.
So, okay, let's back up a little bit. The thing is, I have a hard time believing anything that is said by the timber industry, the Forest Service, politicians, corporate newspapers concerning forests, because, you know, they said we have to cut down the trees because of forest health. We have to cut down the trees because they're dying and we need to salvage them. We need to cut down the trees because there's too many. We need to cut down the trees because they're too thick. It's like there's every 3 or 4 years there's a new story. But is it true that there are more there is more beetle kill in the forests of the West than there would have been 100 years ago. Is there actually more beetle kill going on?
Well, if that's the question, very likely not. There is more beetle kill occurring than 40 or 50 years ago, just as we are seeing more wildfires than 40 or 50 years ago. But the strong connection for both has to do with climate. We get more fires when it's warmer and drier, and the climate has gotten warmer and drier in the West, and that precipitates more fires. And warmer and drier conditions also facilitates beetles. And this is how it works. Beetles try to I have to use the word attack. I hate using it because it sort of sounds negative. But anyway, they attack individual trees.
Predate. Can we just say that?
All right. Yeah, you could say. But they're not really feeding on them necessarily.
What are they doing?
At least when they first. Well, when the initial thing is they want to lay their eggs in the tree, and then the larvae feed on the inner core. But the initial attack is to lay eggs, and they pick trees that are weak. And drought stressed is the usual situation, because the trees are just like a strong elk. They're not, you know, hapless victims. And if they have sufficient moisture availability, they can extrude the eggs and the larvae before they're able to do any damage to the tree. And so what the beetles want to do, they don't want to waste laying their eggs in a tree that's going to, you know, just tick out their eggs. So they try to selectively find trees that are vulnerable because they're drought stressed. And they are able to pick up, this is a really fascinating thing, they're able to pick up ultrasonic sounds from drought stressed trees. They're in effect, the trees are gasping, "Oh man, I'm dying of thirst." And the beetles pick up on that sound, and that indicates to them that a tree might be vulnerable. And then, in a sense, sort of like a wolf pack, a beetle that finds a tree that might be vulnerable knows that it's got a better chance of having its eggs deposited and not pushed out by sap. By having sort of swarming the tree. So they put out a chemical attractants that alerts the other beetles that this is a vulnerable tree. And so then you get a number of beetles will collect on this vulnerable tree and lay their eggs. And then what happens, if the tree doesn't have sufficient moisture to be able to extrude those eggs, the eggs hatch and the larvae hatch, and they start to eat the cambium layer, which is a layer of which moisture and nutrients go up and down in a tree trunk. And gradually they cut off that source of food to the tree, and the tree dies. And they also spread a blue fungus that will also kill the tree. So what happens is a tree that's in good shape, it can usually resist the beetles, which is one reason why mortality in forest stands is not, as usually, not anywhere near 100%. A fair amount of trees can survive the beetle attacks, particularly after, you know, you have your first wave of dead trees. As the trees die, of course, that eliminates competition. So the remaining trees now have access to more water and more nutrients and are better able to deflect the beetles, just like a healthier elk herd is better able to keep wolves at bay. And then after a time, the beetles find basically no trees that are vulnerable, and their numbers die back. So you have this sort of like rapid increase in beetle numbers because trees are vulnerable, and then a gradual decline in the number of beetles as the number of vulnerable trees goes down. And so what we see is that these beetle outbreaks, I hate again using that term, but these population increases occur sort of episodically every 40 to 100 years, depending upon the location. And so you get them coming in, and they're usually correlated with major dry periods. And one of the other interesting things that goes along with this is that there are genetic differences in trees' vulnerability to beetles. And some trees are better able to acquire moisture and produce sap that extrudes the beetles. So that is one of the reasons why, quote, preventative logging, it can be very detrimental to the forest, because there's no way a forester can tell by looking at a tree which one of these trees may be better able to extrude and resist the beetles. And so you randomly go through and cut out half the trees or whatever the prescription is, and you may be removing a significant part of the population that might have this genetic resistance that is only really an advantage during beetle outbreaks. And, you know, the rest of the time, you know, it doesn't matter whether you have it or don't have it. So you might only have a small percentage of the population in any particular stand that might have this resistance, but it may then become the way that that those particular trees survive and then reproduce and resist future beetle attacks in the future.
So is there a pattern too, in terms of, are the beetles these days, since we're in a dry cycle, and there are more beetles now than there were 40 years ago, is there a correlation between, do they attack more second growth, once again with caveats on that word, do they attack more second growth forests or more timber plantations, old growth forests?
Well, they focus in on primarily older trees because they want to have enough cambium layer for their larvae to eat. So that's one of the reasons why seldom you don't kill all the trees in a stand, because not only are there some trees that can resist the beetles, the younger trees are not attacked. And then once they're released from competition, they grow very rapidly. If you have a tree growing in the understory, you know, in the shade and so forth, it may be 30 or 40 years old, but it might only still be, you know, 8 or 10 feet tall. And then it gets released, and then it rapidly will grow into a canopy tree. I don't know the answer about whether plantations are more vulnerable than others. What I would suspect with a plantation, however, is that because the trees are almost all the same species and age, and they may be coming, especially if they were planted from a nursery, they may have a similar genetic background that might make them more vulnerable to beetles. I don't know if anybody's ever looked at that particular issue. The other thing is, in a natural forest situation, although there's plenty of sort of, you might say, almost monocultures of certain species, like lodgepole pine in the Rockies in particular, is very common tree species, and it tends to come in after large severe wildfires, not come in, but, you know, do well, repopulate areas, as well as after beetles. And so you have large areas of lodgepole pine that are more or less the same age. And if they get to this size and age where they're vulnerable to beetles, and it happens to coincide with a drought situation, then you might get a fair amount of mortality in that stand. But nevertheless, you almost never get 100% mortality. The average is, you know, 40 to 50% in most cases. And so you have a lot of trees left that then can grow quicker, and also you have opportunities when say the lodgepole are killed for some of the other species that might be living in that same area, like in a lot of the Rocky subalpine fir or Engelmann spruce, to find an opening and opportunities for sunlight and grow as well. So you wind up getting a greater mixture over time of trees, and till you get another fire that maybe kills them.
So this, I have like a three-part question, and one part is, can you define what a keystone species is, just generically? And then second part is, you have called beetles a keystone species, so can you say what you mean by that? And then the third part is, let's pretend that it's 800 years ago. Let's pretend that civilization isn't deforesting the world. And how would these beetle kills, let's presume, I think you and I both agree that nature generally knows best, and that, we've talked about this with fire, that what is the role of fire in maintaining a healthy forest? So the third part of the question would be, in a healthy forest, what would be, I'm going to say one more thing after I ask this question. What would be one of the roles of beetles in that healthy forest? And the thing I want to say is that I live in a second growth redwood forest, and I know, and you know, that oftentimes dead trees are habitat for more creatures than live trees are. And in the second growth forest, there's also tons of bears here. And one of the things bears will do oftentimes is they'll girdle a tree, and they'll kill a tree. And so I've been watching the bears make more dead, because there aren't many dead trees in this second growth forest here. So a long way of asking a whole bunch of questions at once.
Yeah, well, let me try to go with that. The first keystone species. A keystone species is a plant or animal that has a disproportionate influence upon the ecosystem in which it's found, and tends to influence how many other species grow and interact. And there has been some research suggesting that because bark beetles are native to these forest ecosystems and periodically affect the forest, that they are a major controlling agent of forest growth. And some of the research, a lot of it's been done in Europe with bark beetles, but what they find is that the beetles, by killing trees and selectively thinning the forest and adding significant amount of dead wood to the ecosystem, which I'll come back to in a minute, which you alluded to, but by doing that, they have a disproportionate influence on the forest ecosystem and are one of the factors that increases biodiversity within the forest. And part of the reason for that is what I mentioned before, in that the beetles do not necessarily kill all the trees, and that they also create a greater age differentiation within the forest, because the younger trees are usually not touched. Some of the older trees survive, so you get different age classes, and you get a lot of dead wood, both as snags, standing snags, and then when those snags fall to the ground, wood on the ground. And dead wood, dead trees, provides all sorts of habitat for wildlife and plant species. Just to sort of tick off a number of ways, there are some studies that suggest that 45 to 50% of all bird species depend on dead trees and down wood at some point in their life cycle. Now, the obvious thing is cavity nesters and insect feeders like woodpeckers, but there's lots of other ways that dead trees may be used by bird species for feeding, for roosting, for hunting. Like eagles might sit at the top of a dead snag to, you know, survey a river for fish, for example. And so dead trees are really important to a lot of bird species, but there's many other species that people don't even think about. For example, there are 4,000 native bee species in North America that live primarily in dead wood on the ground. And those bees are very important pollinators in forest ecosystems. So if you have a restricted amount of dead wood in your forest ecosystem, you're automatically affecting the ability of pollinators or restricting the number of pollinators that might pollinate plants and shrubs. There are many lichen species that depend a bit upon being on dead trees and fungi and so forth. So it's not just the higher vertebrates that we see or we notice, like birds, but a lot of smaller insects, other insects as well as plants, depend on this dead wood. And the thing about dead wood is that there's a background mortality that goes on all the time. You know, there's a certain number of trees that are dying every year, but not nearly enough trees die normally to provide the flow and the amount of dead wood that will sustain the forest ecosystem. It is actually the occasional and episodic input created by things like bark beetles, created by wildfire and other ecological processes that have these inputs of dead wood. And it may be a bark beetle comes through a lodgepole pine forest and, you know, say kills half the trees. That may be the only significant mortality in that forest for a couple hundred years. And so, that bark beetle event puts a lot of dead wood on the ground. And even when there's a forest fire, a lot of that dead wood does not burn up, contrary to what most people might think. And so it's additive. Over the years, over centuries, you keep adding to this accumulation of dead wood, which provides nutrients to the soil. When it falls into creeks, it makes fish habitat. It creates carbon storage. I mean, there's all sorts of positive benefits to dead trees and dead wood. And so our whole industrial forestry perspective about forest is that the only good thing is a live green tree. And that may be good for making lumber, but it's not good from an ecosystem perspective. And so beetles are, again, using that phrase, a keystone species that creates habitat for all sorts of other species in the forest ecosystem and helps to make a sustainable forest ecosystem. If you were to remove beetles, there would be less dead wood in the forest. And that reduction in dead wood would have other ecological implications. And that is one of the reasons why we need to tolerate or learn to appreciate the role that beetles play in our forests. And instead of looking at them as if they're a pariah that we need to get rid of, we ought to be appreciating their presence as a very positive influence upon the forest. And I want to sort of digress here before I forget about it, because you may or may not ask me this question, so I'll get into it right now. One of the things that people worry about with a lot of dead trees killed by beetles is that it will increase fires. And there's been quite a bit of research on this in the last few years, all of the studies concluding that for the most part, with one exception that I'll mention here in a second, for the most part, beetle kill does not increase the likelihood of stand replacement severe fires. And that is because those kind of fires are primarily driven by climatic weather conditions, which is another important point to consider, that fuels are not what drives our large fires, contrary to what most people may assume. It's the weather conditions that do that. And therefore, if you have dead trees, you're not increasing the likelihood of a fire. In fact, the research suggests that you decrease the likelihood of a fire. And that's, again, contrary to what seems to be common sense. But what happens is most forest fires actually burn in green forests. And they burn in green forests during periods of extended drought, when there's low humidity, high temperatures, and most importantly, wind. And the fact that what they burn through in a forest fire is the needles and the cones and the small branches. And that is why you have snags left after a fire. That's why you have all these trees just standing upright with no needles and cones and small branches on them. That's what's burned up in the fire, but not the big boles, the 10-inch or 20-inch tree bole. And the same thing is true is that that wood falls on the ground. It doesn't burn up any quicker either. So the beetles, by killing the tree, which after a few years, the needles fall off, and they and the small branches get broken off in winter storms and so forth, they actually decrease the flammability of that stand and reduce its chances of burning. The one exception, which I alluded to earlier, is immediately upon dying, when they still have needles on the tree, but the needles are red, that may, and this is even this is somewhat disputed, that may increase flammability for a short time. However, the contrary thing to keep in mind is that a lot of these tree species, again, use lodgepole pine, since that's the most common tree to be attacked by bark beetles. Lodgepole pine doesn't burn very easily because of the habitat where it's found is tends to be higher mountains that are wetter and cooler, and fires occur, hundreds of years apart. So the chance that the conditions for fire ignition and spread in any particular stand, the lodgepole, to occur during that few years when there's red needles is exceedingly small. The probability is very small. So even if you have red needles, it doesn't necessarily mean that place is going to burn in any time soon, because you have to have the right conditions for a fire in the first place, and those conditions don't happen very often. So once the needles fall off, there's less chance of a fire, and it actually contributes a lot of dead wood to the ecosystem and is an overall positive influence on the forest that we have in the West.
So I want to ask a question in a moment, but before that, I want to highlight and just make sure that I've got something right and make it really explicit that it seems to me that one of the things you're saying that it would help people to understand to look at forests differently is to recognize that a forest is not just live growing trees, but a forest is also dead trees. That's still a forest, and it's a very important part of the forest.
Exactly. In fact, there's some people that will argue that dead trees are more important to the forest ecosystem, and I say ecosystem because it expands beyond just trees. It's all the plants and animals and watersheds and so forth. It's more important to the forest ecosystem than live trees. And this is sort of contrary to everything we've been taught, because of Smokey the Bear and our sort of just predilection to like green trees and green forests. It takes a certain amount of revisionist thinking to, go out and look at all the dead snags and say, isn't it beautiful? Which I do anymore. But, I think initially most people's reaction is that the green forest is more attractive. And but if you're thinking about the forest ecosystem and how it functions, the dead trees and dead wood that result will often last for, centuries in the ecosystem before they are finally sort of totally recycled and back into, another generation of trees. So they may be affecting that forest for 500 or 1,000 years. Particularly larger trees take a very long time to rot, and they can, you know, persist in that ecosystem for many, many centuries. And at every stage of their death, they serve a different purpose. In other words, when they're initially dead, standing upright, they're snags, they have one purpose for a lot of species. Then different species utilize them when they fall on the ground, and as they molder back and sort of rot apart, another series of species will utilize them. So there's sort of this whole successional usage of the dead tree over time that changes as depending upon the degree of rot and how much of the tree has been recycled back into the forest. So yes, dead trees are very important to functioning ecosystems, and that's why this whole definition of what is a healthy forest has been perverted by the forest industry and unfortunately repeated too often by politicians who either don't understand forest ecology and even agency people in the Forest Service and the BLM who don't really necessarily understand forest ecology, where we hear all the time that, oh, the beetles have attacked the forest, so that's an indication that the forest is unhealthy. No, actually, that's an indication that the forest ecosystem is very healthy. It's functioning as it should, just as, you know, wolves should kill some elk. That would be a healthy predator-prey relationship. And so a healthy forest is actually a forest that has some, you know, significant mortality. There are some, one of the things to keep in mind is that the snag forest that comes in after a beetle's and or a wildfire is actually a short-lived sort of phase in ecological succession, and it's actually one of the rarer phases in the forest ecosystem, because, you know, something like an old growth forest is pretty stable for hundreds and hundreds of years, but when you have a beetle outbreak or a wildfire, those snags soon get overtopped by the new trees growing back and the trees that fall down and so forth. So they might only exist for 30 to 50, 60 years and any significant numbers, and then they're gone. So we actually need to have beetle outbreaks on a fairly regular basis to create those snag forests that are essential for some species. And if we don't have beetles, then wildfire is the other major agent that will often do the same thing. But they both work together. And another interesting thing I might mention that just came to mind is that there are actually how a tree dies affects how it rots, and that has ecological implications. So a beetle-killed tree has lots of holes in it where the beetles have drilled into the tree and lay their eggs and the larvae have been inside. And those holes create opportunities for fungi to invade the dying tree and then the dead tree that don't exist in a forest fire. And forest fire also, the charred tree resists rot more than a tree that doesn't have that. So a beetle-killed tree decomposes more rapidly and is easier to excavate than a fire-killed tree, like to excavate a cavity. So you need both, actually, in a healthy forest ecosystem, and they sort of rotate around. You know, some places will have beetles and other places will have fires, and then, you know, there's this kind of shifting mosaic, and some places won't be have either. And it's the mixture of all those things that makes for the healthy forest ecosystem. But it is to me interesting how a tree dies, what kills it, affects its eventual a pathway after that, and how it's utilized and by what species.
You know, it's as you're saying this, I'm getting chills, and it's just marveling, and reminds me of a conversation I had with a friend recently who was saying that sharks have rough skin, and the rough skin makes the only reason that sharks, or one of the reasons sharks can go as fast as they can, is because the rough skin makes a small turbulent layer right at their skin and reduces overall friction in the water. And he was saying this to me, and I was just looking at him and saying, you know, nature is just so smart and so complex. And it's the same with this, that, you know, when you talk about the different ways of dying, you know, making different, fulfilling different, I hate the word roles, but fulfilling different roles in the forest, or it's all such an incredibly complex symphony or dance or whatever word we want to put on it. It's just so marvelously complex.
Well, there's another, you mentioned the rough skin on a shark. There's an interesting thing that's been recently discovered as well in lodgepole pine. And that is that some lodgepole pine, again, have genetic differences in how rough their bark is. And apparently beetles have a more difficult time penetrating and clinging to and penetrating pine that have rough bark. So again, in any population of lodgepole pine, you might have some that are able to resist beetles because they have rough bark, others that have are able to resist beetles because they're better at getting moisture, which, by the way, the same genetic adaptation for resisting beetles through pushing out, using sap to push out the eggs and larvae, also is a good adaptation for drought. And who knows which it originally, you know, was favored, selected for in the trees. But in any event, we don't know in the end by looking at a tree the genetic makeup of these trees. And to me, it's a really arrogant assumption to assume that we can go through a forest and improve it by removing some of the trees when we have no idea what we're removing. You know, as you know, the old saying from Aldo Leopold, the first goal or role of intelligent tinkering is to save all the parts. And in a sense, we can't save all the parts if we don't even know the parts exist. And just like this stuff about rough barks or the differences, genetic differences in trees and their ability to produce sap, it's only been discovered in the last few years. I mean, what else is out there about these trees? I mean, I'm assuming that there's a thousand times more things that we don't know than what we do know, even at this point. And that is why, to me, if you're going to tinker, it should be tinkering at the very edges of things. You know, I might tolerate the Forest Service cutting out some beetle-killed trees in a campground, so that the trees don't fall on campers in the middle of a windy night. But that's that kind of surgical removal and very, very small manipulation is quite a bit different than saying we're going to have timber sales over whole hillsides because we're going to make the forest healthier by removing half its genetic diversity.
So there's a question I've been wanting to ask about. I've read in the mainstream press and also the timber industry and the Forest Service have said that one of the reasons that the beetles are worse than ever, they say, is that global warming is not killing off the beetles in the winter. It's not getting cold enough to kill them off. So, A, is that true or untrue? And B, how does that, if it is true, how does that affect all your analysis?
Well, there is some evidence to suggest that the warmer winters aren't, yeah, that is one of the controls on beetles is harsh cold weather in the winter, which will kill the eggs and the larvae in the tree. And so, if you have warm winters, not all the larvae and eggs or smaller proportion of them are killed. And sometimes even if you have a very long frost-free period, you might even get, in some cases, two generations of beetles in one season. And both will increase the mortality of the forest. However, that, as I mentioned earlier, that can only go so far, because it just like wolves will never kill off all the elk and deer. Beetles, you know, they're destroying their food source at a certain point. And that becomes ultimately the limit on their growth, because they need a certain size tree to successfully lay eggs in and grow and have the larvae grow and hatch out and grow. And there's only so much of that in any forest stand. And one of the things that's kind of interesting, at least when I've looked at beetle kill forest stands, is that they're often in a mosaic, similar to large wildfires tend to burn in a mosaic. So you get, you know, patches where there might be a very high mortality, and then, then it kind of, there'd be green patches of trees that very few have been killed, and then, you know, some with sort of more mixed mortality and so forth. So it's why the global warming may be increasing the mortality for the time being. It, in the end, increases the resistance of the forest to future temperature and drought, because you've thinned the forest, and in a sense you've reduced the population of trees that are trying to get water from the soil and grow there. And so the trees that remain are probably have a genetic resistance that's favorable as well, you know, maybe because, like I mentioned before, they might be better at getting moisture from the soil genetically, or they are just lucky that they weren't attacked, but they still have more nutrients to grow. So I think if you look across the forest as a whole, the beetles are actually creating forests that are better adapted to global warming. For better or for worse, what remains will be forests that are more in line with the available nutrients and water that may exist. And that's another reason why trying to interfere with that selective factor by beetles may ultimately fail anyway, because you're never going to be able to log all the trees everywhere across the landscape for a whole host of reasons. Logging roads are bad. They spread weeds. You know, we get sediment in streams and all sorts of impacts from logging itself that are collateral damage. And since most, at least on timber sales on public lands and a lot of these beetle influences are on public land, because it tends to be species at higher elevation, likewise full pine, that dominate on public lands, they are money losing affairs. There's only so much money we can afford to lose too doing this. So for a host of reasons, the beetles are going to make these forests more resistant to global warming changes, and we'll be doing it for free. And we ought to appreciate them and thank them for all the help they're getting to create forests that are better adapted to the changing climatic conditions that we're imposing upon them.
That would be a great place to end on, but we have a couple minutes left, and I want to ask you a couple more real quick questions. One of them is, I'm wondering also, who primarily eats the beetles? And I'm wondering if the collapse of migratory songbird populations are also, once again, I completely agree with you on everything you're saying. And the beetle outbreak, whatever we want to call it, a beetle increase in population isn't bad. Dead trees and forests aren't bad, all those things. But I'm also wondering if beetle populations might be higher because are there less predators for them, or is that not true and that has nothing to do with it?
I really don't know the answer in terms of beetles. I'm not aware of a decline. You know, a lot of the predators on the, you know, I don't know about the flying insects themselves, what preys on it, but in terms of the eggs and larvae, they are preyed upon by primarily woodpeckers and other species like that that feed on the bark of trees. I'm not aware of decline in those, except for like black-backed woodpeckers, which are highly dependent on burnt forest. In terms of other woodpecker species, I really don't know what the answer is to that question.
So I guess the last question would be, apart from appreciating the importance of dead trees for forests, what do you want people to do to, especially activists, to stop the timber industry / Forest Service / politicians, that iron triangle, from using this as yet another excuse or claim to virtue that allows them to do ever more deforestation?
Well, you know, basically sort of make the points of that I did earlier. One, that beetles are important for, you know, keystone species to forest ecosystems, that dead trees are something to be valued, and that beetles do not increase fire severity and or occurrence, and that we lose money on all these timber sales as well. You know, what's happened, Derek, and I know you understand this, is the social license for just logging the forest for wood products is pretty much gone for the Forest Service. So they've had to come up with some other excuse and reason for logging. And forest health and trying to suggest that beetles or wildfires can be prevented through logging is the way that they've gotten a social license to continue plundering the forest ecosystems, in my view. And the only real way to push back on that, given the politics that's out there, is to learn about how the importance of beetles and constantly champion beetles as important to forest ecosystems, just as activists might try to prevent wolves from being killed all the time for the same reason, saying that they have important ecosystem function. And hope that you convince enough people that that is an accurate portrayal of what's going on, and that over time, as we understand the importance of beetles, that excuse will be eliminated. I'm sure there'll be another one invented, but for the time being, it might help the forest out for a little bit.
Well, I think that everything you've had to say here and your work on this issue and other issues too is really going to blow a lot of people's minds, and I think it will do tremendous good in terms of awakening people to this new attempt to manufacture reasons to deforest. So thank you so much, George. And also I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been George Werthner. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.